And good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO Juno, and this is the Juno Afternoon Program. I'm Matt Miller, sitting in for vacationing Jeff Brown. And coming up this hour, we'll have a preview of the Wearable Arts Extravaganza. Also, we'll find out about story time at the library. And we'll get our entry ready for the 12x12 exhibit at the City Museum. And also, we'll have a sneak peek of all other things happening in arts and entertainment over the next week or so. Forecast for the capital city calls for some strong winds, with some of those winds gusting to about 45 miles an hour by tonight. A little bit of rain expected for the rest of the day today and tonight. Snow level about 500 feet. Temperatures between 35 and 39 degrees. We'll have more right after National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A national panel on First Nations education in Canada has released the results of its long-awaited study. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the panel says Canada has no national system for Aboriginal education.
The three-member panel was appointed a year ago by the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs and by the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations. Now, after holding hearings across the country, the panel has released the results of its study and its recommendations. Today, only about 40% of First Nations students graduate from high school. Scott Haldane is the chairman of the panel.
I mean, they have every potential of any young people that you would see in the country, but they just feel as though they can't get there.
The panel is calling for the creation of local organizations that would function like school boards, and of course, more money. Haldane says without support, it's difficult for young people to achieve their full potential. But the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, John Duncan, says not to expect any big announcements on education money in the spring budget.
Those timelines are aspirational. They're based on what they would like to see happen. There are some complexities whenever we do things in concert with our First Nation partners, so we'll do what we can.
In the Canadian Parliament, opposition critics were quick to call on the government to implement the recommendations. They say the recommendations should come as no surprise to the government. The study is the latest in a long list looking at poor rates of high school and post-secondary school graduation for Aboriginal people in Canada. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The descendants of former slaves of an Oklahoma tribe are seeking official recognition from the federal government. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, this is a new approach to issues of tribal citizenship for the freedmen.
The president of the Muscogee Creek Indian Freedmen Band says they're the first such group wanting to become its own tribe. Ron Graham told the Tulsa World newspaper the descendants of former slaves of the Muscogee Creek Nation have sent a petition to the U.S. government for tribal recognition. He says they're waiting for word from the Bureau of Indian Affairs that they've received the paperwork. Graham says in 1979, the Creek Nation voted to deny citizenship to the freedmen. The Cherokee Nation also voted to strip citizenship from descendants of its former slaves held by tribal members. The freedmen say an 1866 treaty with the United States grants citizenship. Graham says if U.S. officials follow the facts and documents in the case, he believes the Muscogee Creek Indian Freedmen Band will win federal recognition.
That was Kurt Courtney reporting. The University of North Dakota has resumed using its Fighting Sioux nickname. According to the Associated Press, the university started using it again Wednesday against National Collegiate Athletic Association policy. NCAA has deemed the nickname and logo hostile and abusive toward Native Americans. A law requiring the school to use the name and logo was repealed after it took effect last year in a bid to help the university avoid NCAA sanctions. This week, supporters of the name filed petitions demanding that the issue be put to a statewide vote. The law temporarily goes back into effect. Some tribal and education leaders are among those who want to see the nickname and logo retired. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development announced more than $400 million in Indian Housing Block grants. The department announced Wednesday the funding will go to nearly 300 tribes in 27 states. The department says projects could include affordable housing, infrastructure upgrades, community centers, and safety programs. Musicians are reportedly among those planning to protest the Grammy Awards ceremony this weekend. Many are upset over the Grammys' decision to cut dozens of ethnic and minority musical categories from the awards, including Native American and Hawaiian music. A group of Native Americans are among those planning to protest. During this week in 2009, 8 South American countries held discussions in Panama on indigenous issues and climate change. The findings were given to a United Nations advisory committee. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're listening to KTOO Juneau, and I'm Matt Miller in for the Juneau Afternoon. And with us in the studio is Fortalina Lagadino. Is that? Okay. And David Walker and Teresa Bush, and all here from, they're all either director or artists in the Wearable Arts Extravaganza. Did I have that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And if, from what I recall, that this is the first time that you have directed this type of event. Is that right?
That is correct. This is the first year. Nancy DeCherney, who's the head of Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, asked me this year. And it's been really great working with all the artists. Patricia Hull, who's, I think, done a fantastic job over the last few years. I'm just really happy to take over for her this year.
And David Walker, you've been kind of a regular at these events. You've had very stunning entries. And you've got another one planned for this time around?
Yeah. I did another one all in wood this year again called The Beast and the Beauty.
The Beast and the Beauty, and what can you kind of give a little bit of description of what that may look like?
it's a bird's eye maple and a wood called paddock, which is a bright red. It also has a piece of mechanical on it, which is different. It actually has a motor-driven piece that's on it also. It's kind of a cone-shaped, warrior-looking type of outfit.
And that sounds like it may be a little bit kind of a diversion from what you've done in the past, because you've, if I remember right, you've been almost devoted to woodworking as part of your pieces. Is that right?
Yeah. This one here is all wood also, though there's a bit of aluminum in it because I've put the paper backed onto aluminum to keep it into a shape. This is a first year, actually, though, I actually put a theme to my pieces, so that's kind of different.
Now, Teresa Bush, you also have an entry this year, is that right?
I do. It's called Painfully Beautiful.
And where does the pain come in?
It's inspired by all of the crazy things we do to ourselves in the name of beauty.
And so what might we see as your model comes out with your costume?
It's a gown. It's kind of an evening long train gown, and it has roses fashioned out of girdles, garters, pantyhose, tights, Spanx, which I just found out what that was. I was enlightened to those. Spandex. And it has some crystals involved. But.
So all those different types of items that may be used by women in order to achieve their ideal of beauty then.
Right. It actually has silicone implants as well. In the dress, not the model.
Now, David Walker, I'm kind of curious about the amount of time that you put into each particular piece. You must start this months in advance. Is that right?
Yeah, usually sometime in the summer, I start my ideas, sketches. I start playing with materials, shapes, themes. So, yeah, And then they slowly, as things evolve, it starts taking shape and morphs from there into basically the final product. I just finished it actually last week.
Now, do you get it to a point in which you start with the actual construction of the piece and then, it's not going well, got to start over or do something else differently?
That has happened in the past. What I basically do is I build the whole dress in a cardboard first, which is actually very similar to the veneer. So I make a total pattern of it out of cardboard. So at that point, I know that it's going to work, that it's going to shape what it's going to look like. But even after that, sometimes the veneer won't perform as the cardboard does, and I'll have to modify the piece from there.
So start with a model and a mock-up and then kind of fine-tune it as you go along there.
Yeah.
And now, Floridalina, what's the theme for this year's show?
Theme for this year is fusion. So it's kind of a wide open thing. I think a lot of people use fusion. Every year, what I'm really excited about is works such as like David Walker and Teresa Bush, who have like the theme. I think that I think pretty much everybody has a theme of some sorts, and I'm really interested in like the ideas behind the artwork, the piece and the beauty. I think is a powerful piece. As well as painfully beautiful because of what they are saying about society and about ourselves. So I'm excited about that.
Now, when you organize a show like this, you just don't throw everybody together or just do everything arbitrarily as far as the lineup for the show. You mm-hmm. kind of consider different aspects of each entry as you put together that show?
Absolutely. And based on like theme, like some of the racier things are an act two. So, and some of the younger entries are in act one, partly because of material. Another thing, Kari Groovin, who is one of the producers at Werewolf Art and Juno Arts and Humanities Council, she mentioned to me that her husband told her that, music is very important. So in the last week, I changed a couple just to make sure that the music kind of flows with the program as well.
And how is this different from all the other activities that you're busy with other theater productions? I mean, is there a lot of pretty much similar, or is there some differences there?
There's some differences. I think that for each one, though, for each piece, we try to tell the story for each individual piece. It's different than the fact that I think in theater, I'm thinking more about what I think about something, and I think in this, I'm trying to dissect or trying to understand what each artist is trying to do, which each artist is trying to accomplish. And then try to figure out ways in which the music or the, not necessarily the music, but the lights and the video projections or whatever can support that theme or idea.
Now, David Walker, how did you get started in this and submitting entries every year? You're a carpenter, if I remember right, by profession, right?
Correct.
How did you start?
I saw the very first one on TV, and my sister-in-law was in it, and it looked like fun. And so when the next one came around, I thought, what better to use as a material than what I'm good at? So they've all become wood.
It seems kind of a big plunge, though, in order to, make fashion out of wood.
Well, as a hobby, before I started this, I built furniture, design and build my own furniture. So it's very similar in crafting and constructing and designing. I've learned a lot in costume and clothing design over the years. And each year I get a little more better at how to put things together and how to design how things move. So,
and Teresa Bush, how long have you been participating in this?
I was in it for 5 years, and then I took a couple of years off, and I'm back at it again. So this will be my sixth year.
And what inspired you to get involved in something like this as art?
Like Dave, it looked like fun. And I own a plant store called The Plant People, and I thought plants are a pretty interesting medium to work with. And so the first piece was called Mother Nature Gone Wild, and it had 125 live plants in it. And I was hooked after that. It was just like, and then I don't do the same thing every year, use the same medium. I just get inspired by various things.
So you've moved on beyond the plants.
I have, yeah, and to girdles and garters and medals.
Now, Florida Lino, there's two performances this Saturday and Sunday. Is
yes,
that right?
So there's a performance at 8 o'clock on Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday. And I think they may be sold out, but I think definitely call the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and see if they have any extra seats, because I think that there might be some available at the door. So if you are interested in coming to see the show, I think double-check with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and see what's available.
We'll have Nancy DeCherney on later on today, but
awesome.
this is kind of a big fundraiser for the council.
That's right, and it goes to support a lot of artists in the community, adult artists and young adult artists. I know that I was in on one of the scholarships they gave out, and things to like cameras to that are for budding artists, photographers, or they help people who want to study Shakespeare go to different places, things like that. So it's a great organization. It's a great benefit for what they do for the community.
And if I remember reading correctly, the Sunday performance will include some special presentations, the Mayor's Arts Awards.
That's correct.
And can you tell me a little bit about that?
You know, to be honest with you, I have to wait for Nancy to tell you about that.
Okay.
I don't know a whole lot about the Mayor's Awards, so I apologize about that.
Okay. Well, Florida Lena Legadino and David Walker and Teresa Bush, thanks a lot for all coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
some George Benson and Footnit, which brings us to our next set of guests here on a Juno afternoon. With us in the studio is Victoria Brown and Alicia Jones from the City Museum. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
And Alicia Jones, you're part of the staff there at the City Museum. And Victoria Brown, you're an intern at the museum?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Six months.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, your specialty,
Yes, I graduated from Iowa State University in a BFA in fine arts, and I have pursued the museum career for about 2 or 3 years now. The Historical Society and the museum work with the conservation aspect, and just kind of trying to figure out which field I want to get into right now.
What kind of interests you so far?
I like teaching, actually, and art, and computer design. And I like your curatorial work, too. And I'm not sure still what I want to do, actually.
It's kind of a big field, though.
Yeah,
it's kind of wide range.
Yeah.
So, and Alicia Jones, you're here because you want to let us know about something you got coming up. It's an annual event, the 12 by 12 community art exhibit. This is something that I think has been going on for quite a number of years. Is that right?
Yes. This is actually our 8th annual 12 by 12 event, and it's I think all the staff really enjoy it. It's a chance for anyone, whether they're young or old, can submit a piece of artwork, and it just needs to be 12 inches by 12 inches. And it's great. During the show, there'll be, 40-some pieces up, and you'll have artwork done by kids next to people that are, known in the community as professional artists. So, it is really a community art installation.
It seems like this would be kind of a great opportunity for somebody who may not be kind of an established artist to kind of dip their toes in the water and, say, hey, I had a show, so to speak, right? Is that
right.
How it started?
Yeah, I mean, it was, our former curator of collections and exhibits, Ellen Carley, had heard about a program in her hometown of Sheboygan, Wisconsin, called An Inch for Art at the John Michael Kohler Art Center. And so she came back and said, it was just a great idea of all these people. They were doing 1-inch art pieces, and we thought, well, maybe let's make it a little bit bigger. And so the first year they actually did the pieces directly on the wall, which kind of turned into a nightmare in terms of removing the artwork.
Because then you got to cut up the drywall.
Right. So we decided to do something that was maybe a little less impact on the facility, but still, had that community feel. So now it's all the art, the entries must be ready to hang when they come in. We do accept sculptural pieces if they're just kind of ready to, be put on a pedestal, or that's available to the artists. And there's an entry fee of $12.12 to go along with the theme. And we also have an entry form that's available on our website, or you can stop by the museum.
And so what do you usually recommend that people start with? Is just kind of a 12 by 12 piece of plywood and maybe a mounting bracket on the back, or how does that work?
Yeah, that would definitely work. We've also seen people just have a piece of foam core, and there's some little sticky tab things that you can stick that have a hole in them. So that's a possibility too. We've also seen people, with the wire on the back of an actual picture frame. We've seen sort of any and all types of creations come in. So the materials are wide open, and they can use whatever the theme this year. We introduced the idea of a theme last year with focus on photos, and we got a really good response. People just kind of wanted some sort of general theme to help maybe steer them in a direction. And so this year it's texture. So we're really looking forward to see what people come in with in terms of, pieces that have texture.
It kind of sounds like you're kind of encouraging items or pieces of art to be touched, though. Is that right?
We actually had a staff meeting this morning to kind of discuss, will this come up? Is this a hands-on exhibit? So I think we've talked about, talking with the individual artist, is their piece allowed? Because typically in a museum, unless it's like our hands-on room or an interactive, you're not supposed to touch the artwork.
So it was a little placard, do
right.
not touch.
So we'll see. We're still kind of back and forth with that idea. But.
Okay. And what kind of art have you seen in previous years? Can you give us an example of some of the interesting items that have been submitted as exhibits?
Last year there was a piece that was it had been quilted, and it was a photograph. And she actually had the fireweed were 3D, so they're kind of popping out of this quilt square. And that was pretty impressive. We've also seen ones where they're made out of toothpicks. Jeff Brown did a piece that had sort of a maze to it. We've had other people use magnets on a metal piece of 12 by 12, square piece. And we also had people that had, I think, like a pair of extra tufts mounted on it. So it's really kind of across the board.
Now, Victoria Brown, you're going to be teaching a class coming up that will help people put together some entries for this?
Well, it's actually only to youth ages 8 to 16. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely open. They can bring their own materials to this so they could add a little bit of their own flair to the piece. But we actually provide all of the mounting boards and the mounts and the glue and the backgrounds to it.
What kind of techniques are you going to be showing them?
They will be doing rubbings or crayons. We'll have like little metallic sheets with the designs on them, and they can pick their design and combine them. And it looks really good. It looks like a 3D effect on a flat surface. So it's actually very easy to mount and not very messy. So, and then they can add like feathers and yarn and all kinds of other stuff to it.
Is this pretty much kind of like the same technique, say, for, petroglyph rubbings, or something like that? Or for, some monuments like the Vietnam Memorial, the people go with their piece of paper and they do a kind of a rubbing or graphite or something on there to get an imprint of the name.
Yeah, I've seen them do that before, but this is kind of going to be with the colored crayon so they can add more of the visual impact. And yeah, but I've seen people do that before.
And this is for youth, so this is for teenagers and preteens?
8 to 16, yes.
Okay, and when's the class coming up?
Saturday, February 18, from 2 to 4.
Okay, so that's coming up in just a little over a week from now then.
Yep.
Okay. And how long is the class going to be?
Just 2 to 4. And we also would like pre-registration, so we have all the materials ready for the students.
Oh, okay. So that's why we're getting the early heads up on this.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Alicia Jones, these entries they're all set aside on one particular wall in the City Museum. Is that right?
In one gallery.
One gallery. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and how long are they going to be up there?
They will be up through the month of March. So we ask that entries be dropped off Thursday, February 23rd through Saturday, the 25th. And then the exhibit will open first Friday in March, March 2nd, from 4:30 to 7:30. And the works will be up through March 31st.
Is there some sort of application process, or is it just first come, first served in this sort of submission process?
There is an entry form that's available on the website, or they can stop by the museum, but we do take all pieces. So.
Okay, so as much as you have space for them, right? Okay.
Yep.
And how long are they going to be up?
They'll be up for a month.
Okay, and so then I take it everybody can come back and get their pieces and take them home then, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. But you're not limiting to the crayons and the rubbings that Ms. Brown here is teaching in the class. It could be all types of different entries, that as long as it fits in with that particular theme.
Yes. So the general entries can be of any materials and just with the theme texture in mind. And then I think about 4 or 5 years ago, we started doing a class to encourage youth to participate in the 12 by 12 exhibit. So Victoria will be teaching a texture class for the kids. And then as part of the cost of the class is the entry fee. So their pieces will be on display during March when the 12 by 12 exhibit is up. And then they can also take their pieces home.
Okay. Victoria Brown, Alicia Jones, anything else you want to throw in about this?
I think you did pretty well.
We just encourage people to apply, and if they have questions, they can give us a call. The museum number is 586-3572.
Okay, and you folks also have a web address, too, where you can also, can they pick up entries on online?
Yes, online as well.
And what's the web address?
It's juno.org/parkrec/museum.
Ah, very good. You got a good memory. Thanks a lot for coming in, both of you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 9th of February, 2012. 1964, on this day, the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time, teenage girls screaming in the audience. 73 million people watched for home. It was a record for American television at the time. It was on this day, 1870, the National Weather Service was established. At first it was called the Weather Bureau. It was part of the War Department. Then, 20 years later, it came under the Department of Agriculture, then to the Commerce Department in 1940. These days, the National Weather Service is based out of Silver Spring, Maryland. It's the birthday of the theoretical physicist Brian Greene, born in New York City in 1963, a professor at Columbia best known for his work on string theory, who has tried to explain theoretical physics to the general public in a number of books, including The Elegant Universe, Superstrings, Hidden Dimensions, and The Quest for the Ultimate Theory. It's the birthday of Alice Walker, born in Eatonton, Georgia, 1944, the youngest of eight children, daughter of poor sharecroppers, who graduated first in her high school class, won a scholarship to Spelman College in Atlanta, transferred to Sarah Lawrence, and met Langston Hughes, who became an early champion of her writing. Began to publish poetry in the late 1960s, and it was with her third novel, The Color Purple, in 1982, that she reached a much larger audience. It won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award in that year. And it's the birthday of the playwright and novelist Brendan Behan, born Dublin, 1923. His father took part in the Irish Rebellion of the early 20s. The father was in a British prison when the boy was born. By the time he was 16, Brendan Behan was being sent on missions to bomb British targets. He was thrown in jail for carrying a suitcase full of homemade explosives through the streets of Liverpool. And while in prison, he began to write. He wrote his first play, The Quair Fellow, and then the novel Borstal Boy and The Hostage, in which he wrote, "Never throw stones at your mother. You'll be sorry for it when she's dead. Never throw stones at your mother. Throw bricks at your father instead." Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, February Ground. 3 feet of snow in 24 hours, on top of 7 inches. Not really credible here. On the fourth day, we found the car under a 6-foot drift and dug it out. At first, we could not open doors. The post office shut for 2 days. Our road had vanished into a field. We felt the sky had finally fallen and drowned us. 6 weeks. Now, patches of ground emerge from white fortresses. How beautiful is the dirt I took for granted. Extraordinary, the wild green of grass islands. Having the world snatched from us makes us grateful, even for fence posts, for wheelbarrow rising, for the stalwart spears of daffodil uncovered. Everything revealed is magical, splendid in its ordinary shining. The sun gives birth to rose bushes, the myrtle, a snow shovel fallen, overcome on the field of battle. A poem by Marge Piercy, February Ground, from The Crooked Inheritance, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:35, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon program here on KTOO, and I'm Matt Miller sitting in for Jeff Brown on this afternoon. And with us in the studio is MJ Grand from the CBJ Library. She's the Youth Services Director. Thanks a lot for stopping by this afternoon.
Hi, Matt. It's great to be here with you.
And you wanted to let us know about something that it sounds like you folks have been doing this for quite a long time. It's kind of a story time, children's literature at all the various libraries.
We do. This is an ongoing program for, I think, as long as we've had children's programming at the library, so well over 20, perhaps even approaching 30 years now.
So each particular branch has a story time where somebody can bring in their children and they can all hear a story for the day, right?
Right. Well, you'll hear lots of stories and sing songs and usually do movements. They're at 11 o'clock Wednesday at the Downtown Library, Thursdays at the Douglas Library, and Fridays at the Mendenhall Valley Library, always at 11 o'clock. And our target population is the 3 to 5 year old, the preschool set, with an adult, their parent, a grandparent is frequently happening now, aunts, uncles, and whoever's home again that day. We focus on the 3 to 5 year olds, which have kind of a particular attention span, but we serve the whole family. So if you've got the baby in your lap and a toddler running around, that is also very normal.
You can bring him in. No
please,
problem.
Please, the whole family come and we'll accommodate whoever shows up.
And the books that are usually selected for this, these are usually selected for, I guess, what you would say, the pre-readers?
Yeah, the pre-readers. And we really seek to nurture literacy. So we try to give a wide variety of sounds and language experience. We want to embed really, really rich language in a child's mind and experience. Hearing, I think it was the Marge Piercy who was just on the quote from the thing that was just over. A lot of the children's books are very poetic in form, and if it was just written on one page, there, you know, 32 pages in a children's book is very brief. But a lot of what we look for is excellent illustrations to really augment the sounds of the words and to have the story going along for children to follow visually as well as through their language development.
So some sort of a variation over the old Dr. Seuss books that used to go through, right?
Exactly, and it's not only used to, they still really serve a very strong purpose, the repetition, the rhyming, the lyrical, as well as the rhythms of speaking and the rhythms of language. So Dr. Seuss, in his very finite number of words, was really an excellent craftsman at doing that. Very simple rhymes, but they give that language embedded where you can hear the sounds of the vowels with just a slight variation in the consonants. So we still share those. You know, Hop on Pop is still one of my favorite. And actually, Cat in the Hat is a fairly sophisticated story. You need to have a fairly good audience to sit through. It's a fairly long story for our set.
Are there other authors or more recent authors that kind of fit into that Dr. Seuss mold that have been popular or widely read?
Not exactly. He kind of fit his very own niche. Everybody else feels a little derivative or copycat. But in that very early reader set, Mo Willems is the current star. He started out as a writer for Sesame Street and left there maybe going on 10 years ago, and has very popular, many people are familiar with Don't Let the Pigeon Ride the Bus was his first big hit. But then he's gone on. He has a child, and he developed a story called Knuffle Bunny. and Knuffle Bunny 2, which tells the story of his daughter Trixie and her very favorite stuffed animal. And he and she were out on a walk one day, and it got left behind. And the illustrations, he does his own illustrations.
Oh, he does.
He does. Yeah. He's a great artist as well as a language person. But he's developed a series of Piggy and Elephant, and they are friends. And he has very, very simple drawings, very, very simple words. And it evokes friendships and the situations that children live in of sharing toys, getting along together, wanting to learn to dance, who's got the best skills. And they are really, really authentic to a child's emotional experience and really good early readers.
Yeah, everybody, every young child has something like that they're dealing with.
Exactly. And it's nice to have something to support that.
Now, do you have celebrity readers that come in and do this during story time, or is this library staff? How does this
work? It's library staff. There are four of us that work regular desk shifts and have a lot of other responsibilities, but we are the ones that provide the ongoing weekly programming. We have special other events at other times where we have other readers come in. The different programs are authors, illustrators, writers, but most often you'll find one of the four of us.
And we have a few minutes. You brought a whole stack of books here that look interesting. It looks like some new books and some old ones,
books.
Favorites.
Yeah. I have here The Gunny Wolf, which is a true classic by, I don't even know which its original language was, but Wilhelmina Harper was in 1967 came up with this. And it's a story of a little girl who goes into the forest picking flowers after, of course, her mother has told her, do not leave the house. And so as the gunny wolf comes out of the forest. And so there's a couple refrains that are repeated throughout it. And that's another one of the elements that we look for when we're picking books for kids, of a place where a child can participate or the whole group can participate in sharing the stories, sharing some of the rhythms. And so the little girl, as she's wandering, as so many people do, does a little song to herself of kum kwa ki wa, kum kwa ki wa. And when the gunny wolf comes, he jumps out at her and he says, little girl, why for you move? And she says, I know move. Then you sing that guten sweeten song again. I presume maybe this is a German background. And so she sings, kum kwa ki wa, kum kwa ki wa. And the gunny wolf goes gently to sleep. And so she runs away. Pit-a-pat, pit-a-pat, pit-a-pat. He jumps up, hunker-cha, 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 and comes after her. And so again, why for you move? I know move. Then you sing that guten sweeten song again. And it goes, and she eventually gets out of the woods and home and, of course, never leaves her porch again. So we have, you know, kind of old-fashioned fairy tale type stories, and the kids can come along with singing that song, kum kwa ki wa, and hunker chuff, as the gunny wolf goes after her. Some of the other things we look for in books are, as I said, really good illustrations. The stories that we pick at a story time are not always necessarily a best for a parent and a child. We're sitting up in front of kids, so we need really big, really bold, very defined illustrations, which aren't always the ones that you would have a child on your lap looking at the detail and spending a lot of time engaging in.
Right.
So there's like a grumpy cat that's all about a cat who's grumpy. He's not really grumpy. He's really quite lonely.
But I see very bold graphics.
Yeah. You can see them from 10, 15 feet away or even more. So when we're looking for our stories to share, it's a somewhat different format than if you were looking for something that you wanted to really engage in with your child, of a picture search, a Walter Wick or the I Spy type of stories to share there. One of the other things that we share a little bit with is many kids in town. I think there are 1,400 kids currently enrolled in the Dolly Parton Imagination Library that the library supports along with AEYC and the Best Beginnings through funding from the State of Alaska Department of Early Development. And so we share some of those also. We want to nurture children in having a common body of language so that when they come to their schools, the kids have somewhat of a similar experience, and signing up with Imagination Library, all these kids get the same book. Not, let me change that. Dolly Parton sends them out according to a child's age in a particular month.
Yeah.
So it's developmentally appropriate for that child. So from birth to 5 years, they will have an experience of the same literary foundation. And we try and build in that too, so that people know you read books at home, you read books in the public library. We all share a common body of language.
And once again, a reminder now for the story time at all the library branches.
11 o'clock on Wednesdays downtown, Thursdays in Douglas, and Fridays in the Valley.
And usually 3 to 5.
A 3 to 5 plus the whole family.
MJ Grant, thanks a lot for stopping by.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
That's Will Hill and Meet Me at the Library. It's about 13 minutes before 4 o'clock, and with us in the studio is Nancy DeCherney of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you? I hear you don't do afternoons.
No. This is past my nap time.
Oh, gosh. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah. But it sounds like you have a very busy weekend. We just had Florida Lena Lagaduno, and he was telling us about wearable arts, and he kind of begged off on some of the aspects of this event. But this is kind of a big fundraiser for the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's our major fundraiser for the year, and we used to only do Saturdays, and the proceeds from the Saturday show go to support our fine arts scholarships and individual artist grants, those programs that we've had around for quite some time. The Sunday show, which we just added a couple of years ago, I think this might be the fourth one, the proceeds from the Sunday show go to help support the operations at the Jack. So both the ticket sales and the auction sales get divvied up that way. And like I said, it is one of our major fundraisers. We're not the only, like Ketchikan just had theirs. It's their major fundraiser for the year. So I think wearable art is sort of the thing. I don't know why, but
can you turn back the clock and remember how this got started?
No. It predates me.
Oh, okay.
Ketchikan's been doing it for 25 or 26 years. It originated in New Zealand at the World of Wearable Art, where Dave Walker, actually from here, has taken grand prize at that place a couple years ago. They've been doing it for maybe 1 year longer than Ketchikan has. And somebody from here, I think Sybil Davis, saw it and thought it was just swell. And so I think the original one was at the Elks Law, the formerly known Elks Hall, and then it was at A&B Hall for a couple of years, and now it's been at Centennial Hall ever since. And we've been very fortunate to have the Bauer and Clifton Interior Design Group and Northwind help us with the sets, because that's a large space, and that does sort of make it pretty exciting. So do you want to know what goes on for this week?
Well, wait a second. I understand the tickets are already sold out for this.
It is. But there's always a small number of people, you know, they get sick or something happens, they can't show up. So, you know, if you're really, really interested and you want to come, I would say by all means come. We'll start the wait list an hour before showtime, so at 7 o'clock on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday. You can come. You know, the silent auction is out in the lobby. You can enjoy that. There'll be refreshments, a bar out there. So, you know, you can get yourself on a wait list and enjoy yourself until.
There's also a special addition to the Sunday schedule, if I remember right.
Yes, we have the Mayor's Awards for the Arts, which is an annual event. And last year was the first time we did it at Wearable Arts. And it's just a really nice touch because it's a big crowd and a lot of people know all the people. We have this year, Buddy Tabor received the Lifetime Achievement Award, and he'll, as you know, just passed away. So it's a little sad, but nice. There's Bruce Simonson is receiving a patron of. There's six or seven of them, and don't ask me to remember them right now. Dan Hobson, you know, Bing Carrillo, the brewery, Lucid Reverie, Mimi and Nancy Lanehart, Mimi Walker and Nancy Lanehart are the educators. So
you're doing pretty good so far. Dan Hobson also.
Yeah, Dan Hobson is getting artists the award. So it's a nice opportunity for the community to say thank you to these people that have made a lot of difference in our community over the years. I would say the lineup this year is pretty impressive of people who've been doing a lot. So that'll be on the Sunday show as well. We have a drawing for Alaska Airlines tickets. If you want to know about that, you have to call us. Actually, we can say it on the radio. Yes, we. You can't say it on the internet. You can say it on the radio. We have a draw right now. Every $50 that you give to the Arts Council, we put your name in a hat, and you could win two Alaska Airlines tickets anywhere they fly round trip. We're really thankful to Alaska Airlines for that. So, and I just discovered they're flying to Philadelphia pretty soon, which is...
You have family there?
Yeah, we do. So I'm excited. So, but, you know, it's not all about me.
Of course not.
Sure. It is all about the whole... There's tons of things going on in spite of the wearable art. The Juno Pride Course, by the way, is offering up Singing Valentines. And if you would like to order a Singing Valentine, you should call 586-6984. This is a fundraiser for the Pride Course, and they have a great selection of songs ready for your sweetheart. So give them a call tonight at 7 p.m. The Juno Audubon Society, Richard Karstensen, will be talking about the Minden Hall Wetlands. That's out at the Egan Lecture Hall, 789-0139. This is your last weekend to see Animals Out of Paper, and it's. Did you talk to Florida Lino about that too?
I tried. I was going to, but we were running out of time. But that guy seems like he's burning the candle at both ends,
and in the middle too, because he's got three things or four things going on right now. But Animals Out of Paper is fabulous. This is your last weekend to see it, and tickets were selling at like hotcakes this afternoon. So you better get them if you want to. 7:30 Thursday, 7:30 Friday, and Saturday, and then Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee. So also Much Ado About Will, which is Thunder Mountain drama, high school drama thing, this is their last weekend. There is a package deal. If you want to see the Much Ado About Will and the Kiss Me Kate that the Juno Douglas High School is doing, we have a special rate for the tickets. So ask for that package. Kiss Me Kate opens this weekend on Friday. So they've got several other things to do besides wearable art. There is a politics and social media seminar that's being offered. Alaska Litho has started this series of very informative lectures. It's at Centennial Hall Friday, 586-2174. Also at 4 o'clock on Friday, it's the second Friday teen hip-hop over at the Canvas. I think they have lots of fun out there. Jackalopes, we're going to talk about those at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center.
What?
Jackalopes. You know where the, it's actually an Icelandic word. I looked this up. It's where the glaciers overflow like we had this summer. Huh. And so Aaron Hood and all the folks will be talking about what that's all about. It's at the lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, 6:30 and 8 p.m. on Friday. I mentioned that you could see Kiss Me, Kate at 7. You can also, if you missed the Jump Winter Film Festival or if you just want to see it again, it's out at the Egan Lecture Hall Friday night at 7, and that's free.
That's always a popular event.
Yes, and I've heard many positive things about all of those. We've got Hobo Jim in concert. He's going to be performing Friday and Saturday night out at Marlantini's, and this is a fundraiser for the many things that the Flying Lions do and also for a particular medical fund. Let's see, Saturday morning, 11 o'clock, registration for Little League and Shotokan Karate out at the Nugget Mall. So if your kids need something to do, head out there. This is Saturday sessions at the UAS downtown. You can study or learn about pickup diesel maintenance at the Tech Center downtown. That doesn't seem like art, but it seemed fun to me.
You've already signed up for that, haven't
you? I have. I can't do it on Saturday. I've got wearable art. I'm sorry. Again, it's Much Ado, Animals, or Hobo Jim. On Sunday, it's Lincoln's birthday. I don't know what we're doing about that, but at 2:30, you could go to do readable art, and I think you were just talking with MJ about this. And then it's also the Douglas Library has family movie afternoons, and it's Gnomeo and Juliet, sort of fitting in with the whole Shakespeare theme. It's at 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and it's free. Also, international folk dancing, free at the JRC downtown. On Tuesday, it's Valentine's Day, guys. Don't forget. And we begin our gospel choir workshop over at the Arts Council. We have this fabulous singing guy. I'm losing my mind here. But anyway, he comes from Harlem. He and his piano player, they do gospel music. And it's going to be absolutely amazing. It runs Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then there will be two performances of the workshop participants. And it's a presentation studying the history of civil rights in America. So the music starts in Africa, and then there's narration, which leads to music, which leads to narration, and brings you all the way through to the Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream period of time. So it sounds
fascinating.
Amazing and very moving. We have friends, people who moved here from Fairbanks insisted that we get this gentleman to come here because he goes to Fairbanks every year and gives this workshop, and she said, it's the only thing I'm going to miss. So bring them. So we have them. If you're interested in signing up for the workshop, you can just give us a call. He said there's no limit to the number of people, but you do need to be 16 years or older. On Wednesday, it is at noon over at the museum. They have their noon lectures. It's about Tracy Arm, History Notes, Illuminating Landscape with Museum Objects. Mary Irvine is talking about that. The Alaska Design Forum has somebody coming in at 6 o'clock talking about changing landscapes. He's an architect from Oslo. Oh, and I forgot, McGill Pratt at the Canvas at noon will be giving an artist talk. She's the exhibitor up there this month. And let's see, I think that's about it for the... Thursday is Elizabeth Peratrovich Day. I usually don't get in here till Thursday afternoon, so I want to make sure everybody knows about that.
Okay.
Well, we're going to have an exciting week.
Thanks for the heads up, and you'll be back next Thursday to tell us what's going on the following weekend, I take it.
Yes.
Okay. Nancy DeCherney of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, thanks a lot for coming by.
Thank you. We'll see ya.
You've been listening to Juneau Afternoon here on KTOO Juneau, and coming up tomorrow on a Juneau Afternoon, Host Pat Moore will talk with Pat Race about the Jump Society's Winterfest as part of the UAS Sound and Motion series. Also, we'll hear from McGill Pratt about her artist talk on Wednesday at the Canvas. That and much more, including Aaron Hood, Aaron Jacobs, will let us know about tomorrow night's Fireside Lecture at the Visitor Center, and also Hobo Jim will have a preview of his performance. That's all coming up tomorrow. Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up in just a few moments.